Here we go on this Friday. Real Kipper and Bournless. Or should I change that? Real Kipper and Sammy.
Hi, Kippy. What's up, buddy?
No Justin Bourne today, as we've got him on family assignment today.
Yeah, we sent him packing. I don't want to talk about the details in case anybody's listening, but yeah.
Top secret stuff, yeah. But just me and Sammy and Derek Brandeo and Jake the Snake Schultz with you for the next 2 hours. Of course, we go Leaf Edition first as we tee up Toronto and Detroit tonight in the Hall of Fame game. Saturday night, Toronto Maple Leafs against the Montreal Canadiens. Both those games, minus Austin Matthews, as he is officially now on the IR, which would kind of be retro to
November 3rd.
Going back, not a big deal.
So eligible to come off next Monday. So this Monday, so he would be eligible to play against the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah. You know who else is eligible to play? Ooh. Connor Dewar, because of this.
Oh, yeah. That'll, you know, that's, we're both going to the game tonight. You know, that'll really fill in the gaps for Austin Matthews.
Connor Dewar getting back in the lineup. But at least they have him.
Yeah,
prior to that, they would have to make some roster decisions to move him in.
Yeah.
This is an easy way to get him in if you need him without upsetting the roster or the salary cap.
Before we get into that, I wanted to say I was skating today at the Eric Lindros Celebrity Classic for Easter Seals.
Yes.
I played with the Sportsnet team.
Yes.
We had, you know, Gazdick was on the team, Ailish, Justin Cuthbert, Ron McClain.
If I wasn't so old.
Your former North Bay Centennial teammate, Troy Crowder, was our pro.
So he's the toughest guy in the tournament.
Yeah, and he told us the story about how he was the guy that the Have Another Donut, the clip was about, he was involved
with Kowarski.
And what was the coach's name? I can't remember the coach's name he was telling, but it was
Jim
funny.
Schoenfeld.
Thank you. Anyways, I only played one game. I had to leave and come to the show in the second game. But the first game we played against a lot of the guys that play in Eric Lindros' skate.
Thursday mornings.
Skatey 8. That's what their team name was.
Johnny.
I don't know who the hell these guys were, but buddy.
Kevin.
We got sales guys and me out there. These guys are doing three-touch breakouts through the neutral zone. This guy had hair that must have been down to his...
Johnny, my buddy Johnny.
Oh, my God. This guy was buzzing. I couldn't believe it. I felt like an idiot. Like, I couldn't get near the puck. Like, I'm not great.
And hockey. And he's ripped too, eh, Johnny?
Ripped, huge. And I'm not good at hockey. Let me put that out there. But I felt like I was learned to skate out there. I couldn't get a sniff. So
every Thursday morning, I cannot leave the room either getting dressed or after leaving without giving Johnny like one or two Mark Messier stories. China Club and all of it.
Anyways, good hockey player. We had fun. But I think they ran it. I think it was 6 or 7-2.
Yeah.
We barely touched the puck. Gazdick scored a goal for us at least. So the former NHLer put one in for us. Like, yeah.
Well,
there
great.
You go. It was fun. What an event. I think there was 14 teams up there.
Always a great event.
Eric Lindros. Easter Seals. Eric Lindros came out for our team. Got a couple pictures with him. Saw how big he is on the ice. The very big E. It was awesome. It's an awesome event. So good on Eric Lindros. Good on Easter Seals. It was a blast up there.
Awesome. We've got a terrific show lined up for the next 2 hours. And real soon we're going to bring in J.D. Bunkus, co-host of Leaf Talk, with you after every game. I'm sure I'll just ask him how he's doing and then get another word in the next 20 minutes. But just note, at 4:30, we're going to welcome in Naz Kadri as well. The book is Dreamer, My Life on the Edge. And here it is right here. And played last night against the Boston Bruins. Scored a beautiful goal. They lost in overtime.
Yep.
But they're settling in nicely in Buffalo as they prepare to play the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow. But he's going to come on and talk about his book a little bit. And for Leaf fans, for our Leaf Hour, it's an incredible read. It really is. And what's so unique about it is that guys wait to the end of their career to write this stuff. This guy wrote it all, and he's still playing.
Interesting.
So I want to get into that. And, of course, it's an official Off the Rails Friday, which means Doug McClain comes back. Now, I don't know if you've ever sat in that chair and asked him questions or not. So.
I've never. He's going to make fun of me the entire time. I already know it.
How can he not?
Can
he not? But in the meantime, let's make fun of our first guest. Let's bring in
buddy. What's going on?
Boys, how are we? Yeah, I'll try to keep it brief.
No, listen. If it's brief, it's not you. I want okay. you to be you on our right. show.
I don't know how to be anybody else, so you're all right.
So let me start with asking both of you guys this. Is Austin Matthews injury prone? Is he like Hendy? When you think of Austin Matthews, do you think of him as an injury prone guy?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
No. Okay. No.
But you have to go through a series. You have to go through a process to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple more of these, and we've got a different conversation. How's that?
Okay. I'm just looking at his games played. Like, he's missed a lot of games over his career, looking at the list on of his games played here. I just don't know. It's something that I'm starting to think about more because it seems like every single year, even when he does play, there's always a stretch of games where it's like he's banged up, he's not feeling right. Maybe it's just more me, but what do you think, bud?
No. I think that injury prone is when a guy takes a hit and you hold your breath, right? Like when something like, and this is not a shot, but Sammy, how often do you and I watch games together and when Joe Wohl goes and makes an awkward looking save, we hold our breath and go, oh no, something's going to happen. That's injury prone. Injury prone to me is where it's like, it feels like something always happens. And so that's just not the case with Matthews. Has he missed some games? Absolutely. Is the record one of the weirdest things in Toronto sports? Absolutely. I think there's probably like a greater conversation there, but no, I think of a guy who's injury prone where whenever you hear that he's on the injured list, you roll your eyes and you go, oh my God, this again? Like that's an injury prone guy to me. And I've never felt that way with Matthews.
Okay.
And there has to be something to be said that they are going to be over cautious with this guy.
Absolutely.
And that like, it's a bigger picture here is that we don't care anything about your numbers. We don't care about you hitting goals or we're past that. This is about a process of getting you and the team ready for April.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to suggest that you're putting the cart before the horse in terms of, will they make the playoffs? Will they not make the playoffs? They have the utmost confidence that they will. So it's about preparing you to be ready in April. And the only thing the only reason you're bringing this up is because of the fact that the tendency is to go like, there is no injury. We didn't see him get hurt. He's not being carried off the ice. Mm-hmm. There's nothing for us physically to say that guy's hurt. It's like he's here and then he's not here. He just kind of disappears.
Yeah.
Much like in the playoffs, right? It's just like, where is he?
Mm-hmm.
And now we're doing it again. But
God, they love lying about it. It's just like, he's day to day. He's day to day.
But it's true. Day-to-day. He is day to day.
I know. Yeah.
But they're not lying. They're just not telling you what it is.
Okay. They're just
but everything
they're
again,
not telling the truth.
Does it make you feel better, JD, that I tell you that everything I hear, has nothing to do with his wrist?
Yeah, I would say wrist or shoulder, right? Because that was the actual
not his shoulder either.
Concern. Yeah, so when he was younger, there was a real moment where I thought maybe he is going to be injury prone, right? Remember when, oh my God, dude, this market is crazy sometimes. And it's definitely partially our fault, like all three of us with a hand up for some overreactions. But do you guys remember when we were having like doctors on shows?
Yeah, we did. We've
like,
done that.
What's Matthews' shoulder going to look like when he's 28? Is he going to be all right? Is this degenerative? And so if I hear it's not the wrist, I'm thrilled. That's because, again, to get to kind of injury prone, I think of two things. It's a guy who always gets banged up. Like I said, the hold your breath. Oh, my God, it's always something. Or somebody that has an issue that's chronic or debilitating. And Kipper, like, you know, this is better than anybody. Like, you start to lose your shoulder in this sport and it's hard to get it back. Not exactly the most physical player in the NHL, especially given his size. But yeah, if I know it's not his shoulder and I know it's not his wrist, I'm absolutely feeling much better about it. Like, of course, those are the injuries that you worry about get worse throughout the season.
So JD, let me ask you, and I'll ask you, Sammy, that you guys have a unique show.
Thank you.
It's called Leaf Talk, and it's moments after a Leaf game. And for those of you that really have no life, subscribe to it because it can be fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, like thank if you. You've got nothing better to do, like go out with friends or sleep, right? Subscribe.
I always am wondering on Saturday night, I'm like, who are these people? Thanks,
but
guys. Jeez.
What is it like? What is it like to go in and try to analyze with the emotion of just watching a game for, and then going at it right away? I get to absorb everything I watched. Sometimes you'll make a few phone calls. Mm-hmm. And then you prepare for a show. You guys go at it like seconds after a game. And what I've seen so far this year is that we've seen two Leafs, one that's going to win the Stanley Cup and one that has no chance to win the Stanley Cup. So where are we after tonight?
Which one have you seen more of?
I'd say a split, in all honesty.
Yeah, it's pretty close, right? Like, it's actually pretty close how Jekyll and Hyde they are. I try to watch as much of the league as possible, but they really do feel like the most bipolar team in hockey, right? In terms of one night, you're right, it's the Tampa Bay game. It's that Boston game we just witnessed. Or other nights, it's the Columbus game where you're trying to cobble together excuses and wonder what exactly happened here. They obviously, I think that they're perfect for sports talk in this fashion because you want to have a visceral reaction. You want to have, I like both. I like being able to collect your thoughts, Skipper. You know, I have my show as well, and I think I try to do that a little bit more when I wake up in the morning and I've slept on something. But to me, one of the things that I think we've lost a little bit in sports is that gut reaction, is that visceral reaction, mm-hmm. is that like, oh, just you see something happen and you react to it and you say, this guy is a bum or this guy is amazing. And oh my God, the feeling that you are going to be a cup contender versus the feeling that, you know, your night is ruined by a team. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, we live in an era where we have more data, more information, more experts than ever before. And so to me, it's like, the thing that I really love about the show that I get to do with Sam is that you don't get to sleep on it. You do have to just kind of go with it. And is there like a million regrettable things that we have on the show? Yeah, yes. Of course. You could do like, bet you if you did a compilation of what we were right about or what was overly reactionary versus like what was actually like really insightful and meaningful and worthwhile, there'd be one ledger much, much thicker than the other. But God, I think that's what's so fun about sports is that it is immediate, it is reactionary. And that's what really draws people to it. It's like, it's the best reality TV on earth. Nothing's ever going to beat it. And so, I love getting to be able to do it right away. It's and hard. Then also being able to think about it critically later.
It's hard during the playoffs, though. I will say that. Like, during the playoffs, where it's like, I'm a fan, Kipper. The reason I get to sit here, the reason I've made it all the way here is because I love the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm passionate about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And after these games in the playoffs, like, when we had to go on after David Pastrnak scores in Game 7 again, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, what am I supposed to say?
But that's followed up on the will he or won't he Joseph Woll play?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, anyways. So, it's a fun show to do, and I think they are a good team, the Leafs. I think they're closer to like the Stanley Cup contender, but I think all teams have these lulls and all teams have these bad games, but there's just so much muscle memory with this core and there's so much like built up where people have these preconceived notions about how they feel. So they're immediately like, oh, same old Leafs, same old this, but like their highs this year, they're still the only team that's beat the Jets. Like the Jets are, 101? Their only loss has been to the Leafs. Yeah. Like, it's just, they've had great performances I think they can build on. So anyways, that's the answer to your question.
Kipper, don't you feel that way, though, sometimes, too, with this team, where it's like they're almost hard to talk about because you remember having every single conversation about them already? Like, you are in this, like, you're like, oh, right, we're doing this one tonight. This is the conversation of the jour. Like, even as we get back to the Matthews thing with the record, I'm almost like, can you guys lose a bunch of games without Matthews so that we don't have to do the exact same theorizing of
Kipper
why?
Loves
so
well Kipper loves the Matthews.
Of course he does.
I grew up with two sisters who, and my mom, who watched their soap operas, Young and the Restless and Days of Our Lives. So,
AKA you watched it too.
The Leafs have been the longest running soap opera since 1967. So they're not short of storylines. No, they're not short of characters.
Yeah.
Right?
Lots of characters.
So that's all we're doing is just watching at times a soap opera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
Exactly it.
So
I just finished reading Kadri's book. Like, I know you got him on.
Yeah.
It was a good book. I really enjoyed it. I think you're bang on in terms of writing as you're still in your career. Like, I can't imagine being so close to it and having that happen. But yeah, you read about like the things that he went through specifically with this Leafs organization as a prospect, as a young man, the scrutiny that he faced, like from his own organization, some of the things that you said that were said about him to him, some of the things that were asked of him. And yeah, you are reminded of just exactly what this has been for, quite some time. The soap opera that is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get into this with Kadri as well, but let me start with you, JD, because seems to be some different school of thoughts from people generally in Toronto that have watched this team over the years. And that is, it's one of the hardest places to win, or it's one of the easiest places to play.
What do you mean?
I would say,
go ahead. Go ahead, bud.
When I say that, I mean, you guys can lose. You can get knocked out year after year. There's still 18,000 people there. They're screaming. You're still gods, as Mitch Marner alluded to. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. They still love you. You still get top dollars. They make a gazillion dollars. Who wouldn't want to play here?
Yeah. Kipper, do you think it's easier now to be a Toronto Maple Leaf or when you played?
I think it's all the same, to be honest with you. It just,
so you lean towards easier?
It's just, no, it's not. It's just the same. And it's just an individual that has to deal with it as a player. It's like, what do you feel? Like, you're giving enough or you need to give more? And where's your cutoff line? It's just, some guys can sit there and say, we can lose year after year in the first round. I still don't want to leave. I like it here, right? Yeah, they'll carve us up on social media, but I don't want to leave here. And then there's others, right? Like maybe a Tyson Berry who will go, get me out of here.
I
think the social media thing is the most important point that you made. It's just, I think there's two different worlds that if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs, a Leaf, and you don't live on social media and you sort of go the Sidney Crosby route and have nothing, that it could be really awesome to play here. Because generally at the arena, you're not getting booed a ton. Once in a while, there'll be a couple boos that you'll feel. And, you know, you go out in public as a Toronto Maple Leaf, people are going to laud you. People are going to love you. You're always going to be like, oh, my God, it's Mitch Marner. Oh, my God, it's Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the second you go on your phone and you start looking at, you know, your Instagram DMs or you look at your Twitter DMs or whatever social media, it's probably not going to be as fun. So if you're – there's two different worlds to me when it comes to being a Leaf. And I think social media has totally changed it in terms of the visceral that they face. No?
I just think it's about the same thing that you said, Kipper, where it's like it's personality type. There's clearly guys that thrive here and love it here where they want the pressure of the big moments, right? Like the Darcy Tuckers of the world. They always talk about it where it's like going from playing in Toronto to going to other markets is just like completely night and day. And for me, I would just think that if you're the personality type where you want to feel as though everything has a stake to it, you know, you're really geared towards, oh my God, this could be super important, that playing in Toronto would be great. If you're someone that just likes to, I would say, go to the rink, have a good time, spend your millions of dollars. You love being in the league, but it's not your everything. Like hockey is not your everything, but you really care about what people have to say on you. The media wears on you. Like we've seen how that can frustrate guys. Like I don't think that he wasn't necessarily for this market because he had a good career here. But think about like Phil Kessel at the end of his career with Toronto, right? Where media guys are coming up to him in his stall and he can barely handle it anymore.
This guy's an idiot, man.
And again, that's a worse time when it came to Leafs. But I think that you probably feel a lot of that frustration with some of the guys that have been here now and that have built up the loss after loss in the postseason. So to me, I think comparatively with what you see in Europe, with soccer teams, with what you see with some of the biggest teams in the United States, whether it's like the Philadelphia Eagles fans or the pressure that comes
Cowboys.
With being, you know, a New York Knick or, Dallas Cowboy, that it's not as big as we seem to make it in the echo chamber that is Toronto. But, to me, it's like there's far more positives. You get to – I think Toronto, if you're rich, is an incredible, incredible city to live in.
Yeah, just ask Kipper.
And – yeah, I was going to say, Kip, you tell us. Like, you know.
Wrong guy.
Isn't it? Hey.
At the end of the day.
Your free Mercedes.
Hey, we're in the middle of the day, and I'm working with you guys.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Not that rich. Not rich enough.
Yeah, add to the pile. Like, listen, keep adding to the pile, brother. I think that, if you're someone that really hates scrutiny and hates the attention and just wants to kind of keep to themselves, that Toronto probably is a bit of a nightmare at times.
Yeah.
And if you're somebody who loves pressure, thrives under it, loves to feel like an actual atmosphere with your games, although that seems to be dissipating as it gets more and more corporate in those seats, as more of the Kippers are in there, you know, eating their sushi, counting their dollars.
I'm lower bowl. I got to act like, you know, I've talked a lot of crap on Leafs talk about bad fans. You know, I got to be loud tonight. I got to be Johnny Leafs fan. Go Leafs, go.
But then the usher is going to tell you to be quiet. That's the word of the street. Maybe. Is that the usher pressure is telling you to be quiet. But yeah, I just think that it's all about personality type boys. Yeah. Like if in terms of is it hard or is it not?
Yeah. So if we look at the start that they've had and then the good, the bad, maybe even the ugly here, how important is this weekend against Detroit and Montreal to walk out of here with four regulation points or, you know, getting the record to 9-5-2 or else if it isn't, are we still kind of asking ourselves, what are they?
I think we're going to be asking that question for a while, right? Like, it's going to be probably up until the deadline before we start to have a real feeling of what the consistent impact is of Berube, his style. To me, the important thing for this weekend that, like, I really care about is what does Mitch Marner look like without Austin Matthews? Because I think that you could make a pretty strong case that his best game was last Saturday. And there's a lot of people who follow this team, who watch this team, who care about this team, who comment on this team that have wondered what it would be like if the Leafs would be better off spreading the talent around. Mm. And like, to me, it seems pretty clear that Max Domi is not a guy that should be playing on your third line, trying to drive a couple of players that are also not line drivers, that he looks awesome with elite talent and kind of disappears at times when he's down the lineup and has to have more of like that, that two-way role or that more responsible role. So to me, it's like, are we going to continue to see this Marner? And does that inspire this coaching staff to start to think differently when Matthews returns? Like, that's the big question of the weekend to me.
Love that. I think I actually like, I know this is crazy to say,
Marner away from Matthews.
I like them. I like watching them
without
the certain star once in a while, just to see how guys react and just to see how things look. And I enjoy when they play without Matthews. I don't want it all the time, but I think they play, like, it's just a different game. Everybody plays different roles and they look a lot different. Obviously, I want to watch Austin Matthews play, but I do think it's just it's telling the way they play without him. So, and Marner, I thought, was brilliant on against the Bruins. Yeah. I thought he was unbelievable. So, I think them separated is something that will always back to the well. Like, we're talking about the things to talk about. But, you know, I think they're both good enough to drive their own lines. And then with a team that's kind of lacking depth in the bottom half of the lineup, it's something you'd want to do.
Yeah, but Kipper, I was listening to you talk about the power play and how you're like, hey, they're calling the shots here. Like the Matthews and Marner, like these guys aren't coming off power play one. And I just wonder if the same thing applies to the top line, whether Berube, I hate saying it like this, but whether he does have the juice to say, when Matthews is back, he's not playing with Marner, when those two guys clearly since the beginning of their careers together have stated over and over and over again that they want to be together on a line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if there's anyone you'd have to trust that if you're going to bring in this guy that's the Mr. Accountability guy, he can sit there and do it, right?
When push comes to shove and you need a goal, you're going to put them together.
You're right.
Right?
Yeah, that's it.
You're right.
That's the bottom line. So where you feel those pressure points are between game one and game 82, you can kind of pick your spots.
Yep.
You got to also give the team confidence that anybody can get hurt at any time. This guy disappears. You can play with him before. Remember in November, you guys were good. You felt good. Remember in January?
Yep.
Like, give them all those type of scenarios
over the course of
a regular season. So when those surprises come and somebody disappears or has a headache or, you know, just, hey.
There's has a headache and there's then has a party at his house to watch for game three.
There's others. There's others that can pick up the slack and have confidence for it.
Yeah. We should go because we got to get the Kadri.
Okay, man.
Yeah.
JD,
boys, Leafs
talk tonight.
Always.
We're back.
Yeah, of course. Jackie Redmond.
Oh, I'm done. I'm Wally Pipped.
Yeah, you're done.
I'm done.
Yeah, you're
like,
done.
Every guy's be like, I got to look at you're an idiot. Now I got Jackie Redmond. Like, it's going to be bad for me.
It's Leaf Talk.
You had a great run, brother.
Yeah, I know.
It's Leaf Talk tonight with JD Bunkus and our boy Sammy, and it's also the JD Bunkus podcast.
That's right.
All right, pal. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, bud.
See you guys.
See ya. Yeah. Jackie Redmond in my place tonight. It's a tough blow for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you've lost your job.
Well, good thing I got this one, right, buddy?
So we want a few Kippers Clippers. Where do you want to go?
We should hit a break, come back in case Naz jumps on with us so that we can be ready for him when he comes back, okay? So we'll come back, we'll see where we're at, and then we can play some
clips. Are you acting like a producer?
I booked the show.
JD's seat right now?
I booked the show.
Are you
hosting the show? I cut the clips. I do everything around here.
Are you more powerful than me?
No.
Okay, good answer.
No, not at all, bud.
All right.
I just sit here.
Okay, let's take that break. And when we return, we'll track down Nazem Kadri. The book is called Dreamer, My Life on the Edge with Dan Robson. And he's next after the break. You're watching and listening to Real Kipper and Sammy.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Sammy McKee. Real Kipper and Board, Leaf Edition.
Yeah.
Waiting on Nazem Kadri to join us. Tough night for, it's a good point, I think, going into Boston. A place that has left Nazem Kadri disappointed on a couple of occasions.
Me too.
And you too?
Me too, watching games there. But listen,
you're not going to ask him about the meltdown, are you?
God, you nuts? No. Yeah, we want to live that together.
It is in his book. And it's called Dreamer, My Life on the Edge. And it's out there now. Went to go get a copy of it, and my book was selling right beside it, undrafted.
I saw that on your Instagram.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
There is nothing that seems more daunting to me than the process of writing a book.
Well, I can't believe that he did it, and did it like during the prime of his career.
Yeah, guy's still lighting it up. How do you got time to score 30 goals and write a book?
It took me over a year to write mine.
Yeah.
All right, let's welcome him in from the Calgary Flames, Nazem Kadri, who's got a book out now, Dreamer, My Life on the Edge. It will be hot this holiday season. Naz, thanks for doing this, man. How you feeling? Travel to Buffalo after, albeit a good point against the Boston Bruins. So how do you feel?
Yeah, feeling pretty good. I mean, besides all the long travel and hopping in and out of time zones, about as good as we're going to feel. So, not bad.
And writing a book, and I went through the process, Justin Bourne, who's not here, went through the process, took me over a year to do it. Like, how about you? Like, when you were approached, when you thought about writing it during your career, do you wait after your career? How did you ultimately come to the decision?
It was a different, unique situation for sure. I was approached by the publisher, Penguin Random House, to have this opportunity. They believed in my story, thought it'd be a great story to tell, and I never really thought much of it. But after that, the hamster wheel kind of started turning a little bit, and figured it'd be kind of cool to reflect on my career thus far and just tell some great stories along the way.
And did it take like a year? Were you able to do it in a few months, over a summer? Like how much effort was it?
Yeah, relatively strenuous for sure. I can't say that I knew what I signed up for right when I signed up for it, but it was quite the process. I finished it. We banged it out pretty quickly. I mean, I'd say about 9 or 10 months, got the audio book done in a couple weeks, which was a busy couple weeks for sure, but that's certainly worth a listen. I was kind of pulling my hairs out a little bit, reading for 3-4 hours straight in a studio. So,
do you have an audiobook, Kip? Is yours an audiobook?
Yeah,
no,
it's,
no audio.
I can only imagine the amount of takes that would take.
Nobody wants to hear
the audiobook. The audiobook was certainly a mental challenge.
Yeah.
But we got it done. It turned out great. Very happy with it.
That's awesome.
So this is our Leaf Edition, Naz, of our show, so it's safe to say that the juiciest parts of your book are with the Toronto Maple Leafs and going from as a kid growing up to the London Knights and then coming in as a Toronto Maple Leaf. How was it in terms of how the decision to how deep you wanted to go? Like a lot of the stuff that we go through as NHL players stay behind the scenes and they don't ever really come out. You made the decision to go to certain places in terms of, how how sometimes you were treated, how you were mistreated in all of that. It, again, how easy or how hard was it to reflect and go back to those places that at times, you know, made you feel uncomfortable or frustrated?
Yeah, I mean, that's what writing a book's all about, I guess. It's a tell-all sort of thing and, you know, involves some juicy details and some things behind the scenes that, you know, typically fans or media wouldn't really know at the time. But, you know, for me, it was a balance. That was a little bit challenging to, you know, I didn't want to expose anyone too much, too dramatically, but I also wanted to tell my side of things and give some interesting stories along the way. So, you know, for me, I tried to do it in a respectful manner, but, you know, one that was pretty blunt and direct, which, you know, and some obviously I made it very lighthearted and humorous also. So, you know, that was definitely a big challenge, how to exactly portray some of the, you know, situations that happened.
The one thing that I got out of it right out of the gate was like old school and new school. And, you know, when it's all said and done, you thought you were kind of from the newer school where you get to express yourself. I love the story of you wearing your Beats headphones where, you know, Brian Burke and some of the veterans wanted that thing off. And it's like you didn't really understand why, but it's like that's the way it is, right? And I'm just wondering now if you understand it as you've gotten older throughout your career to the point that they were making, and was it a good point or a bad point, or was it just the fact that they never took the time to explain to you why it wasn't a good reason to wear headphones into the dressing room?
Right. I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, I was certainly one of the only ones to do it. And, you know, looking back on it, I understand, you know, why they possibly, you know, could have been frustrated. It's, I mean, as we know, hockey's a traditional game. You know, a lot of, you know, you're supposed to, you know, act and dress and do things a certain way. And obviously I kind of didn't get that memo early on in my career. And it's a bit of a learning process. It's a learning curve. I mean, now you compare it to an NHL dressing room, there's like, you know, four or five guys wearing Beats.
Does anyone not have headphones in pregame? Like everyone's got headphones.
The dressing room. It's like, oh, whatever, you know, just be ready to play.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I didn't quite understand that at the time, but, you know, there was not really much pushback from me. If someone, you know, one of the veteran guys or management told me, hey, you know, cut that out, you know, it'd be done the next day.
So, yeah, we're mentioning the least part of this book, Naz. How many times a summer, because you spend a lot of time around here, do idiots like me come up to you and be like, God, Naz, we just miss you so much here in Toronto. And, oh, Naz, you were part of the worst trade of all time. How often do those two things come up to you?
So often, it's not even funny. And that's extremely flattering for myself. It honestly never gets old. Never gets old. I still appreciate hearing that from the fans. And, you know, just kind of having, you know, that acknowledgement and that love, that's all a player wants, you know, to have, to be acknowledged for, you know, going out there every single night and just doing everything you can to try to win. And, you know, the great fans of Toronto certainly, you know, noticed and appreciated that.
So you're obviously very happy playing for the Flames. You guys have off to a great start, but, you know, do you miss it? Do you miss being a Leaf? Like, I know it's a different thing being a Leaf, but I mean, do you miss it?
I do. I mean, I really don't think it's for everybody, but, yep. You know, for me, obviously kind of my neck of the woods, team I've always grown up watching, you know, certainly do at times, but I am more than happy with where I am today and the team I'm playing for and the city and the fans that I play for. It's, you know, Calgary's been nothing but good to me. So, you know, obviously I miss my previous teams, but, couldn't have picked a better one to be on right now.
I want to read an excerpt out of your book where you talk about criticism, about being able to take all kinds of pressure and criticism, and that you should be tough. When I started in the league, there was a culture of trying to determine a young player's toughness and let's see what they're made of. But now we're much more aware of how damaging the kind of approach can be. Were you damaged at all when you left the Leafs?
Oh, I mean, you nailed that, Kipper. You nailed it, buddy. You know, I think, you know, it can be a little ruthless at times. And, you know, I could, you know, I always try to put on the other shoe and try to look at it from a different perspective. But, when you come into an organization, being an 18, 19 year old kid, you know, just basically, I mean, obviously, you know, whether you're underperforming or not, I mean, you know, being bullied is never a great thing. And, you face a lot of self-doubt and, you start to criticize yourself in a way. And if you don't have that, you know, determination and that pride, you know, and that commitment to try to, and that mental toughness to try to move forward, then, you know, it's probably not looking good for you.
In the book, you stood up to a bully and you pretty much ended the bully in Babcock when you and Bozak confronted him on what he did to Mitch Marner with the list. And that was the second when I read your book, that's the second I knew Babcock was done.
Yeah, I mean, that was a slippery situation for sure. And I think, Babs understood he had made a mistake and, apologized for it afterwards. But nonetheless, the kind of damage was done. But, you know, for me, honestly, personally, you know, everyone kind of harps on Babs and likes to get on him. But, you know, I really do, think he was a good coach and he made me a better player and kind of, made me understand things about the game that maybe I wouldn't have under a different, coach. So, you know, as you know, whatever 3-4 years there, he gave me the assignment to challenge the other team's top lines every single night, and I thrived off of it. And, I became a lot more, attention detailed and attention detail oriented because of him. I mean, he certainly went, he went about things sometimes the wrong way, but, you know, for me, I actually always had a good relationship with Babs.
In the book, you also go out of your way to speak very highly of Mitch Marner. You describe him as entertaining, a fun personality guy, a guy that everybody would want. Like, when you talk about his sense of humor and how funny and entertaining he is, like, the Leaf fans don't see that side of him. They don't get that perception of the way you describe him in your book and the way he's perceived out here in the market. And I'm just wondering, is that because he's felt over the years much like what you've gone through?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I don't think he's going to act, the same in front of a camera or 10 cameras as he would, sitting in my living room. So I think, it's a bit of a touchy subject because, I mean, the fans obviously have to pick somebody to get on, and it's always going to be the guys making the most money. So, that's always things I talked about it in the book, that I saw happen to Dion and Phil. It was always, they're kind of the scapegoats to anything that went wrong. But I've known Mitch for a long time and I've watched him play for a long time. And he's a guy that I'd take on my team any day of the week.
And underappreciated here, still in your eyes, maybe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's, he's the heart and soul of that team. And without Mitch, I think, things wouldn't be as good.
I got to ask, how fast does it go, Naz? Because I'm looking at your Hockey DB here. And, like, I've been a Leaf fan my whole life. I remember when you were drafted, I was excited about you being drafted. And I look back in your first year, you played one game in 09 and then 2010, 2011. And that just feels like yesterday. Like, how fast does it go, man?
That's the thing. It flies by, man. It feels like the older you get, the faster it goes too. And, I was always the guy, when I was young, I'd have the veterans be like, hey man, enjoy it.
Yeah.
It goes by fast. And it's a cliche that, couldn't be more correct. And I was always like, man, I got years left. I'm good. Don't worry about me. Like, I'm 21. I'm good. So, looking back on it now, just, the relationships I've made and the people I've met and just a lot of gratitude going through this book and reflecting on my career thus far, and lots left still to tell, but very happy with where I am today in my career and very thankful I even have the opportunity to do what I love to do every single day.
So now you're the old guy telling them to, like, oh, take, you know, you better take it and enjoy it. It goes
exactly,
fast.
Yeah. Exactly. That's hockey. Yeah. It's a revolving door. It's just an ongoing circle. Yeah. You know?
You do paint an amazing picture of external and internal pressures of playing in this market. We just had a conversation earlier, Naz, in terms of is it an easier place to play or the hardest place to play in this market? Because as Mitch has alluded to, and this is a guy that's only won one round, and we haven't seen a Stanley Cup since 1967, but he says you get treated like a god here, and you do. And I've lived it myself, but is it the hardest place to play in the league or the easiest at times?
Oh, cannot be the easiest. That's far from easy. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, Mitch is right, though. You know, if you embrace it and you want to step up to the plate and you want to step up to the challenge and you're winning games and putting everything you got into every single game, fans notice that. They acknowledge it, like we spoke before. And when you're getting W's, there's no better place to play, without a doubt. But, you know, if you're not and you underperform, you're going to hear about it. And you're going to hear about it from, you know, 100 people. So it's, you know, it goes both ways. But, you know, you always got to take it with a grain of salt. And it was always something that I embraced.
It's funny that just to think about that playing here and how easy it can be. I can only imagine. I got to ask you, this is a dumbo question here, but how great did it feel to score an overtime winner in a Stanley Cup playoff game? How'd that feel?
that's got to be a highlight of my career. I mean, for sure. That's something that, you know, I'll never forget. And, you know, for it to be in a Stanley Cup final in an overtime game.
They didn't know it went in.
You know, that's, and obviously the controversy that comes with it, it's just, you know, that was just a perfect storm all in one, you know, with one hand after, you know, 13 days after surgery when I was supposed to be out 8 or 9 weeks. You know, the doctor said, hey, I don't think you're coming back. I said, no, I don't think you're right. So didn't really take much medical advice at that point. I was coming back regardless.
You mentioned a couple of movies in your book that you referenced to. One that you didn't that I often do is called Sliding Doors. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a guy that jumps on a subway and how his life changes.
It's a good movie, actually.
If he makes the subway and the doors don't close, or if they do close on him, and it takes you both sides of it. And I'm just wondering your Sliding Doors moment as a Toronto Maple Leaf, and where it was, and of course, somehow, some way, whatever happened to you as a Leaf led you to a Stanley Cup, and I know you'll never change that for a million years. But was there a sliding door moment for you as a Leaf, either a suspension, or, you know, you talk about the bender you went out the night before, and then President Brendan Shannon had to suspend you for 3 games. Do you look back and say, yeah, that's when it ended for me here in Toronto?
I mean, obviously the suspensions didn't help, right? That was kind of the last straw. And, you know, that was unfortunate how it ended, but, you know, it's any young player will tell you this. I mean, towards the end of their career or midway through their career, they, you know, it's a learning process. Playing in the NHL, you can't assume that some 19, 20-year-old kid is just going to come in the league and know the ropes right away. You got to, you know, they learn from veteran players. They learn from experience. And then that's how they, you know, adapt and adjust to that situation. So, I mean, for me, obviously the end of my tenure was, you know, the playoff suspension, but, you know, up until that point, I felt like I always brought my best in the playoffs. Obviously, I regret some of those things that happened, but, you know, it's made me who I am today. Faced a lot of heat for it, and, you know, I was accountable for every single thing that happened, and, you know, I wish it was different, but, you know, I've been a guy that's, you know, always, you know, performed, you know, better under pressure and better in the playoffs, and, you know, I look to continue that.
One more reference for me, and I'll let you go, I promise. And that was the Bull Durham one, where there was a Leaf coach or a manager or I don't know who, but wanted you to watch Bull Durham because of the lessons of a veteran and a young kid. And you refused to watch that movie.
I've never seen it.
Out of spite, correct?
That is factual. Yep, that's a movie that's been boycotted for the rest of my life, probably. I mean, I've heard it's an absolute tremendous flick.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I've heard nothing but great things, but that you'll never see me watch that movie.
Yeah.
Care to share us, you know, who recommended it to you? What movie critic on the Leafs?
Nope, you're not getting me there, Kipper. Nope. But I will tell you that they did, in the book I'd mentioned, they read me a list of first-round busts before they gave me that movie recommendation. So you tell me how you'd feel.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Probably a crappy movie anyway.
For sure. And the other one I got a kick out of it was that, was it Babcock and Lou in your living room? And just
and Mark Hunter, I believe.
And Mark Hunter.
All three of them were there, just cozy on my sofa.
And trying to figure out what to feed them or give them as
God, what a nightmare, right? Dude.
Yeah, that was my mom's duty. She was dialed in that day.
Oh, thank God.
She was focused. So she was buzzing in the kitchen, making them whatever they needed.
So the late Brian Murray, head coach of the Washington Capitals, came and met my mom and dad, and my mom wanted to give him like these Greek cookies. They're called koutoubiades.
Okay. And they're easy for you to say, pal.
It's all white sugar. And I'm like, Ma, you give him that, he's going to look like he just snorted a pound of cocaine. Get that cookie away from him.
Hey, man, it's a cultural thing.
It is.
When people come over, you know, you're not going to leave with an empty stomach. Let's just put that
one. Hey, listen, really appreciate your candor on our show today in your book. It's going to be a top seller. We know that. And it's one of many coming because you got another book in you. Like, you got a long way to go here.
Hey, maybe a movie, Kipper. Who knows? Oh, yeah.
You got who's playing you? You got him picked up? Who plays
I,
nice?
I got to do some research.
All right, pal. Well, we really appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the season, okay?
Right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Naz.
That's Naz Kadri. And the book is called Dreamer, My Life on the Edge, an inside look at the challenges of being an NHL player, especially one here in Toronto.
Yeah, that was awesome to talk to him. Real thrill. I will say that I was a staunch defender of him and everything that happened here. And, you know, he had his issues. He's a kid coming into Toronto, all the money, all the everything. But trading him was
one of the worst trades.
In
history.
I said it at the time. I'll say it now. I just think about what they would look like with him as a, we would have had to pay him. They would have had to figure it out. I understand. Maybe he's not here still. But even for those 2 years that he's in Colorado, he's here. They have a better chance at winning the cup. And he goes there and he does win the cup. So
I'm reading the book. And the only thing I can ever do when I read stories like this is just envision where I was at his age and where he got challenged. I would have just curled up. I would have said, like, whatever you want, I'll do.
Yep.
And he was not like that. That's not the way he grew up. It goes into the first story about Brian Burke wanting him to live with a billet family out in Oakdale or Oakville.
Oakville, yeah.
And he had already had a place downtown. Mm. And he went out there for like 5 minutes, and then he's back in his apartment in his condo downtown. And I'm like, that's some big stones right there, because someone caught him in his building. It's like, you shouldn't be here. And he goes, yeah, I'm here. And then Brian Burke calls him in the office the next day, and Brian Burke kind of waves the white flag and says, just show up and play hard. That's all I care about. And he got to live downtown. And wow. I'm sitting there going, in my day,
probably wouldn't have flown.
You could have billeted me with the Charles Manson family and I would have lived there.
Yeah, really? No, that's
I'm like,
funny.
Whatever you want. Just let me play. God. And it's a different world with these kids now. And some of it's good, but some of it, can still hurt a guy.
Yep.
But you find that fine line, and the fine line led this guy to a Stanley Cup. His name's on the Stanley Cup.
Should have been a Leaf for life and should have won the cup here. That's the last thing I'll say.
For another story.
Yeah.
All right. Is our hour up
it's
already?
Up. What an hour.
Way to go, Sammy.
Thanks, bud.
Doing a great job.
Oh, I appreciate that.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, it's Off the Rails Friday. Doug McClain, head coach, also an author of Draft Day. How teams pick winners. Coming up next. Plenty more to go here. Hall of Fame weekend on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show.